As one of the New Yorker's most recognizable artists, Victoria Roberts is known to legions of fans for her charming illustrations and whimsical humor. Now in After the Fall, Roberts depicts a singularly eccentric Upper East Side family who are cast out of their lavish apartment and find themselves camping out in the trees in Central Park. It is After the Fall, a novel, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Victoria Roberts to the roundtable. Victoria, thank you very much. A great pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Joe. Same here.
The book is such a delight. What led you to write a novel and obviously to illustrate it?
Well, I've been thinking about this book for 25 years. I'm a bit slow on the uptake, but I was born in New York City, but brought up in Mexico and Australia. And when I came back to New York when I was 29 and had no work, I was living near Central Park, and I walked around and I thought, what would happen if I didn't get work? And there was no safety net, and I might end up living in Central Park. I thought it was quite possible. So I thought about that all those years ago. But it took me a long while to be able to write this and have it be, you know, I am a humorist after all, and it couldn't be about really being homeless and really suffering what that is, you know.
Tell us a little bit about the character, beginning with Pops, a mad inventor.
Pops is actually very much modeled on my stepfather and the man who appears in my cartoons in The New Yorker, who was Bob Benjamin. He was a New Yorker from Long Island, a self-made man who had a PR firm in Mexico City and had a great sense of humor, very dry sense of humor. And the mother, who is a tad bipolar, was my mom. And the book is a tribute to her. And she was very, very changeable, but also very inventive. So had we ended up in the park, she would have made it work.
and just a little bit flighty, but in a good way.
Yes, yes, in a good way. And Bob was an original. So he's an inventor in the book.
And also there is the young sis, who is a theater impresario, and the narrator is her brother, who is very sweet.
Yes, the brother actually is also modeled on Alan, my stepbrother, who grew up to be a union organizer and does have a very, very good heart. And I thought he would be the best observer of the family. That's why I didn't make Sis the narrator, because Sis is too busy doing her shows and thinking about Stephen Sondheim.
So it seems as though you would spend, to do a project like this, it would have you spend a lot of time in Central Park.
The book actually, for years, I've known exactly where these people live in the park. They only live in a small part of it around the Curves Memorial Boathouse, but each one has kind of a wing in a way. They each have their separate ground, and they have these pods that Pops has invented, so they're not cold and they're not hungry and all of that because of various inventions. But I would just sit in this area, and I remember trying to, because I wanted to draw another part of the park, I would try to take them out of these places where they were, and I couldn't. It seems that they are tied to the land around this Curbs Memorial Boathouse, and that's that. So to me, the characters are actually very real, and the story is very real. I don't feel that I invented it, but it was more of an archaeological dig looking for this story that was always there.
This area around Curbs Boathouse, they call Pug Hill, where pug owners get together on the weekends. And are you a pug owner?
Yes, I am a pug owner. And as I grew up a lot in Mexico City, I didn't see any pugs until I was in Australia, and I had a peek before that. And I remember my first pug thinking, this is the perfect dog. I love pugs. I just adore pugs, and I have, well, I had three. Two were my mother's, and one passed away, so now it's just two, a black one and a fawn.
You have a line in the book that says his skinny dogs, which look very dachshund-like, his skinny dogs made me miss our fatty pugs. And you draw a beautiful pug. They're very cute, but I would think they're fun to draw as well.
They are, and really, I think people like pugs because the configuration of their face is a bit more like monkeys, so they really look like us in a way. So they have much more human look. They're wonderful to draw because they're like a sausage with a head.
My father always used to say they look like they were chasing parked cars.
That's right.
Yeah. When you look at a story like this, does the story come first and then you illustrate it, or do you have ideas, or do they sort of go simultaneously?
Usually the characters really dictate what I do. They write it. And so most of it is about dialogue. And what I had really for many, many years was the premise of the story and not really the story. The story really took a bit of developing and sitting down with. The drawing always comes after the idea for me.
And I would assume, though, you have an idea of, okay, this would be a great time. This would be a place where I can draw a pug, or I can draw the characters sitting on the ground under a tree.
You know, I it's very strange, but I'm so dialogue and sound driven that I often don't notice a lot of the world around me. It really starts with the character of the pugs, or the character of the mother, of the father. The only thing I had is I knew that the mother would keep her cologne cool in the pond in front of the house, and that it would be attached to a Chinese foo dog sculpture. I know those kind of things, but then I have to go and check where I've set it and actually look and take photos of the environment because I don't remember it.
You write in the book, overnight the pond had been drained. At the bottom it was sludge mixed with broken pieces of rock and glass and concrete that took a few days to dry out. Sis, who expected the water removal to reveal a version of Nessie, the Loch Ness monster, swallowed her disappointment and announced that the spot was, quote, perfect for Beckett. I love that line.
As it was. That's actually from spending, you know, as I would go and visit this area, around the time of the New York Marathon, they actually had drained the pond, and it's the first time I'd seen it drained. And it really changed the whole area. It made it sort of very, very, very sad. They really lost their water views. And that's why I used it there in the book, because that's when there's quite a change in the mood. But you know, it actually, if they do this annually, I think there should be a Beckett on. Happy days.
When you talk about the characters really dictate the illustration, is that the same in doing a cartoon, in the sense it's the characters that come first before the line or the gag?
Yes, well, it's the characters that come through in their dialogue. If you notice, every person you know has a certain rhythm to their speech and a choice of vocabulary, their own vocabulary, and that's what sort of shows you what their character is. So really, dialogue is what I love more than anything in the world. And that's why it's odd, because I draw, but in fact it's sounds that I think of. I love radio plays, for instance, and I listen to musicals a lot. I do love Sondheim. And so it's really what people say that is captivating to me.
And that dialogue can dictate a situation or something that you think is funny for a cartoon.
Yes. Usually what it is that character, I usually draw the people in the living room. And what it is something that is very everyday, that is a very regular thing, is crystallized into their point of view by that line of dialogue. For not really explaining that very well. But what we love, I think, about what makes us laugh at the end of the day are very, very, very small things, details of what a person is like or was like. And I guess that's what I love. I love character. I know some characters better than others. I don't know them all as they're not all equal in my knowledge of them, believe it or not.
And I assume there is a great deal of observation that must take place for you to capture these moments that not only are included in this book, but are a regular feature in your work in The New Yorker.
Well, that's why I have the couple, because they have been together for many, many, many years, and a line of dialogue from them means a lifetime of being together. So yes, it comes from actually far deeper than you would imagine. But then that's why a cartoon is such a wonderful vehicle, because you can have a very simple line and you can define where, you know, your whole setting and everything, and you can do a lot with something very, very small. So it's a wonderful medium, I think.
Well, the name of the book is After the Fall. It's a novel. It is published by Norton. Victoria Roberts, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much, and I wish you all the luck in the world with the project.
Thank you very, very much, Joe.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Again, it's After the Fall, a novel published by Norton by Victoria Roberts. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.